the fun we've been having with the live streaming this morning, this talk seems a little bit appropriate. It worked better in production for us, let's put it that way. Yeah, so my name is Lee. I work for a company called Human State. We have a couple of platforms that we run, one of which is Give and Gain. And if I move my mouse over here, this is giveandgain.com. It's sort of a crowdfunding platform. It allows charities, fundraisers, event organizers to raise money, basically. And exactly what is it? I mean, we are a non-profit foundation, and we have been since the offset, which was 2001. And as I said, we allow charities anywhere in the world to accept donations from anywhere in the world. The one thing that they have to be is a non-profit charity or foundation to use our platform. And we were one of the first crowdfunding platforms on the web, if you think 21, 22 years ago. That was quite a new thing. But you can also imagine that back then the state of the pearl was, as you would expect, it was heavily CGI-based. The platform also used to have a lot of features that weren't really necessary for the core functionality. So it had things like a CMS, blogging, hosting, kind of the thing that people were throwing to everything they were making back then to try and attract users. So we've kind of simplified the platform a lot over the years. And one of the main things we've done is we've rewritten it from a CGI.pm application to use Mojolicious Boost, DBIX class, etc. And one of the features we have added in recent years is events. We added this in 2018. So charities often hold fundraising events. So think of things like marathons and all that kind of stuff that allows lots of people to get involved and raise funds. And this is one of the big events we added recently to the platform. So this is the Boston Marathon. So they run every April, I think it is. We added them last year, and they raised well over $20 million, which was fantastic. They have a lot of fundraisers that get involved, a lot of other charities that sign up to the event and kind of raise by proxy by signing up to this event. So events have become a big thing on our platform. And then 2020 happened, which made events difficult. It's kind of difficult to get together in person. But that didn't stop people. Virtual events became a thing. The link I have here, which I won't open, was it was a marathon, but it was done in the form of people running on treadmills in their living room to still run a marathon to raise funds for that charity, for that event. But one of the things that did happen is streaming became much more popular. So this is the live watch time on Twitch. And if you look at that kind of peak there, it looks kind of familiar with what happened in 2020, 21. March, April hit, and then suddenly lots more people were doing streaming things. So what is Twitch? Well, Twitch is a live streaming platform that allows mostly gaming content. So lots of users of the platform, they live stream themselves playing video games, and lots of people are interested to watch this. And the streams can often go on for hours, or even days. And some of them are actually raising funds doing this, sometimes for themselves, sometimes for good causes. One of the ones that is not necessarily on Twitch is a video game speed racing event that runs every year or twice a year, where people all come together in person and they run video games as fast as they can and they raise millions for charity. So what they want, what these Twitch streamers want, is they want some tools to visualize the fundraising goals and progress. They want little widgets that appear in their stream and say, X has donated $100, or a progress bar that shows where they're getting, basically. So we started adding these widgets back in 2020. And this is an example of one of our widgets. This is not necessarily for live streaming, but this is a dynamic widget that updates the total whenever there's a donation. So if I stand here for long enough and speak slow enough, maybe, did it just update then? It might have updated. There we go, cool. And what we also have is this is an example of one of these donation alerts that can appear in a streamer's feed. So this is not a demo. This is literally hitting our live site and pulling back the information. So there you go. I mean, seems like there's quite a few donations going at the moment, which is good. So we actually had somebody reach out to us to ask about these widgets. It was kind of an initiative from a live streamer in South Africa. And I have this little video, this short little TikTok that should explain some of it.
For the past 2 years, I've managed to raise over 40,000 Rand for charities on my birthday live stream on Twitch. And I do this with the help, of course, of my amazing viewers, but also with a tool that I help make for a charity organization called Give and Gain. It allows you to start fundraisers for South African charities. And with every fundraiser, you're given a progress bar and alerts that you can put up in your stream and that will trigger every time somebody donates. It works in whatever your favorite broadcasting software is, Streamlabs OBS, OBS, or even XSplit. And it doesn't use PayPal, which takes a massive amount of money away from charities and admin fees. If you want to learn how to set up a charity stream through Give and Gain, they have a very cool campaign that's going on right now for Mandela Day called #GameForGood, where you can sign up, and as a gaming community in lockdown, we can help carry the charity work that normally would be happening right now outdoors. And all you need to do is play for 67 minutes. A massive disclaimer, I'm not paid to make this video for this, and I wasn't paid to work on the service that Give and Gain are using. I just think it's an important moment for us in the South African gaming community right now to start making solutions instead of complaining about what's going on from the sidelines. Let's make a difference.
So that was Grant Hines, who is a South African-based streamer. The platform actually originated in South Africa, which is why there's kind of a heavy influence still in the platform. And he was our beta tester, and he raised 40,000 Rand, I think it was, which was double his goal. So pretty successful beta test, I think. And we're not just using these widgets for live streaming. So this is actually at the Boston Marathon last year. So they had a screen up showing the progress of the totals and all the donations and things like that. So the question is, how does this all work? What are we doing here to achieve this? And just to briefly explain the flow, it's relatively straightforward. I mean, we did get a lot of the necessary pieces. We got all of our ducks in the row by rewriting the platform from CGI.pm to Modulicious and so on and so forth. So we got access to some of these tools and technologies that would have been more difficult otherwise. So we have the user agent connecting to our Modulicious server via a load balancer, and that connection actually gets upgraded to a WebSocket. And then the Modulicious process itself connects to RabbitMQ, which is a message broker we're using on the back end. And when somebody makes a donation somewhere else on the platform, a message gets sent to a queue, and then all of the consumers connected to that queue receive the message, which is a JSON payload, basically. And then the HTML DOM can magically, dynamically update using the JSON content it's received. And there's no refresh of the page required, which is obviously an essential thing for a widget. So this is the URL that was generating that little widget that we saw about three slides back. And it's just got a bit of HTML and JavaScript that actually opens the WebSocket connection and just reads JSON that gets returned for each message. So this is an example from a few weeks ago with names changed, but GDPR and all that. But As you can see, it's a relatively trivial JSON string with some Unicode in it, because that's what we need, obviously. People put emojis and all sorts of things in there when they make donations. And yeah, what about Mojolicious? So this is just a small exact code in the Mojolicious controller. So one of the concerns we have here is we need to use a non-blocking flow, because lots of things can connect to the message queue. But RabbitMQ itself, it wants to kind of block when we connect to it. The traditional way you use a message queue, RabbitMQ, is you have a consumer that connects to it and sits and waits, so it blocks waiting for a message to come through. That doesn't obviously play well with a non-blocking flow, because you end up with your process sat there and you can't accept any more incoming connections, which is not good. So we have this combination of Mojo IO loop with an actual non-blocking connection to RabbitMQ. So it says, connect to the thing, do I have a message? No, go back around the loop. And we have a sleep there, a recurring time of 3 seconds, which is about right for our use case. And what about RabbitMQ? Yeah, so I mentioned this is the message broker we're using, and we actually use it in quite a lot of places. So we've replaced a lot of cron jobs with message queues, daemons, all that kind of thing. And traditionally, as I said, the way you use these message queues is you have a queue for kind of each thing you want to achieve. So if I'm generating password reset emails, I push a message to the queue, and the consumer reads from it and sends whatever it needs to do. And usually you have one message processed by one thing. And this allows you to do massive parallelization. If you're sending out 1,000 emails where you can have hundreds of consumers connected to this queue and they only receive one message, they receive a unique message. So you can process all 1,000 in parallel, but not risk processing the same message more than once. However, with the live streaming widgets, we want to send the same message to every consumer, because the way the widgets work is you could be connected from many places, potentially. I'm connected here, somebody connected doing a live stream, somebody connected elsewhere, and they want to receive the donation alerts for the same, in this case, the Boston Marathon. If we did it the other way, we would miss donations on that widget. And just to explain that a bit further, I actually have our live RabbitMQ backend broker here for Give and Gain. And what we have here is we have exchanges. Let me just make that a little bit bigger. So this is our standard exchange where we're pushing things like generate a PDF, send a password reset, set email, process an export that a charity needs. And as you can see, there's routing keys here, essentially, stuff that invalidates keys in Memcached. And as I said, we can have many consumers connected to a queue. Bindings. But each consumer receives a unique message. Whereas if we compare that to our donations exchange, which is the thing that's sending the JSON to these widgets, we don't actually have routing keys. And the way that RabbitMQ handles this is when the consumer connects, a random queue is generated. So these are all queues in the exchange without routing keys. And because we've defined this exchange as a fanout exchange, which is just here, any message sent to that exchange will go to all queues. So it will end up going to all consumers, essentially. And in terms of the code that we use to interact with RabbitMQ, we're using this CPAN module, NetMQP RabbitMQ, and we have our own shim around it, just so we can use it more easily. We have a role where we can connect to a queue or send a message. So it's just a bit cleaner in our own business model objects. So for example, this is how we publish to that particular FANOU exchange. This is in a role somewhere, and we can just, from anywhere in the, say in the donation class, we can just say, publish a message, and it goes to the exchange that it needs to. Okay, so how about some lessons learned out of all this? Well, we use AWS with auto-scaling for our web servers, and you just need to be aware that if you've got things connected to a queue, and then AWS starts killing instances, then you're going to lose that connection. So you obviously need to make sure you handle automatic reconnecting. RabbitMQ just works. I say just works. But you have to be aware of it has inbuilt protections. It's written in Erlang. It's, I say, bulletproof, but we haven't really used it at scale. And it does have protections where if the memory usage gets a bit too high or the disk space is a bit too low, it will stop accepting connections to protect itself and to protect the queues. So you have to be aware of these watermarks, basically. And yeah, as I say, we haven't really used it at scale because our use case here is if somebody's streaming, then the person doing the streaming will connect to the widget. It's not everybody that's watching the stream that's connecting to the widget. So we haven't had the need to scale to thousands and thousands of consumers because it doesn't fit the pattern of our usage, basically. And yeah, there's a couple of things on CPAN to actually interact via Mojo with RabbitMQ, but they seem to be broken because they haven't been updated in 3 years maybe now, so they've fallen behind quite a bit. So just be aware, if you start checking CPAN and see something that does what you think it does, it might be a bit out of date. And that's really it. Does anybody have any questions on all of this? No?
Seems to be not here in the room, but we have one question in the chat. And it is the simple question, are we hiring from, I think your coworker, Nicholas. Yeah, it was really interesting. Thank you for that. And maybe tell us if you're hiring.
I think we're still hiring, yes. We've been hiring a lot, so I think we probably still are hiring.
One question from me personally. You showed these widgets, and it was a simple HTML page with the widget content in that, and in the first moment I thought you are delivering an HTML document, but actually it's a JavaScript widget that is just rendered in an empty page, for example.
Yeah, it's just it's just JSON that gets sent back, and basically the DOM gets updated to do what we see is happening on the screen there. So yeah, it's pretty straightforward.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Very good, interesting technical presentation, and I think a good thing that you're doing there.
Thanks. Thank you very much.
Oh, another question here just raised.
You told us that you didn't scale up pretty much, but do you have an estimation?
Yeah, I mean, I obviously did some load testing when I was writing some of this on my VM. And as I said, RabbitMQ, these queues are very lightweight on RabbitMQ. The issue is more if you've got tens of thousands of things in an I/O loop, sleeping for 3 seconds and then polling, and then that's where you're going to get the issues. But as I said, we do use auto-scaling in our AWS load balance groups, so it automatically scales that way. I mean, there would be a tipping point eventually, but it's hard for me to see us reaching that given the particular use cases. Okay.
Okay, thank you. So you're done. We make a short break of 10 minutes, and then we will progress with another German talk. Der nächste Vortrag ist dann Lernen mit Superkräften. Ein bisschen auf der Metaebene. Ich bin gespannt. Gleich geht's weiter.
Thank you.